This is It Just Takes One. One person, one experience, one idea, one moment to change your life. Here's what's coming up on today's show.
Yeah, there's a learning curve. And I don't care if you're 2 or 22 or 82, there's going to be some learning things, because one of the key things in the book is life changes whether you like it or not.
Welcome back to It Just Takes One. This is Kelly Watson, and it is a pleasure to have you back with us. Today, I am very honored to introduce you to Dave Carlson. Dave is the recent best-selling author of a book titled Shorten the Learning Curve Using Lightbulb Moments. As you listen to this conversation, you'll find out that Dave is a former math teacher and he went into real estate for a while. He's retired now, but he's beginning to share some of the lessons he's learned in life. And at heart, he's really a storyteller. As you listen to our conversation, you'll hear him tell stories about sports and about travel and experiences that he's had, people he's met, and how all of those experiences have taught him, but also how all of those experiences have continued to encourage him and all of us to embark on the learning curve. Now, learning curve is a term that we don't always really stop and think about. Even light bulb moments is a term we might use, but don't stop and think about it very often. I hope in this conversation, in this episode that you're listening to today, that it will leave you feeling more intrigued and curious about those terms. That if there is something out there that feels daunting or insurmountable because the learning curve is too steep, that you will be inspired by Dave's message to go for it. And even as you progress and move through your life, that you will often pause to appreciate light bulb moments, to be open to the wonder and the curiosity and the awe that can happen when we're open to learning and discovering something new. I'm going to leave it there for now. I would like to let you listen to the rest of the conversation. So I invite you to sit back and listen in as Dave Carlson shares his story. Dave, it's so great to see you, and welcome to It Just Takes One.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad that we're here too. I know we've had a little bit of back and forth with technology to try and make this happen, but we're connecting and I can hear you and see you, and I think we're going to be all set today.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Excellent. Well, as you know, we like to invite our authors onto this podcast because it is great to share your book and your stories with others. And it's also an opportunity for people out there who are interested in writing and might have questions to hear what your process was like and what that whole thing was for you. So we'll talk about all of that on today's show, but let's just start by talking about your recent best-selling book. And the title is Shorten the Learning Curve Using Lightbulb Moments.
Yes.
We need to talk about what all that means, but let's start with a really easy question. Why did you select that title and this topic for your book?
Basically, the book title describes movement forward. I was an Algebra 1 teacher, and I got a phone call from a teacher from an eighth grade. And she says, I have a student who's not doing well. He gets a 75. And be honest with you, Dave, he's not a real good math student. He wants to do well in Algebra 1. He and his mom want to send him to a good college. Can you tutor him? And this was in June, she called me. So I called the youngster and his mother and chatted with them. And we started working, I think, the first week of July, every Saturday morning for 2 or 3 hours. My objective was to have him always be ahead of what he was going to learn. I felt if he knew the material ahead of time, the learning curve, there wouldn't be a big learning curve. It would be, oh, I've heard this before. This is not bad. So we worked very hard for 2 months getting the basics in. And again, we covered the stuff they were going to cover the first few weeks, the 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time. The first week he said, this is nice going in and I know the stuff already. And within 2 weeks, he said, I know this stuff. That was a big, big change. And so that's when I learned, oh, and by the way, I've been teaching math for a while, so this is not the first, oh, if they know ahead and have, I can do this, it gets done. So the learning curve to me, and I'm a sports nut, is so true in sports. University of Connecticut just won the championship, and they had a guy that was, actually he left high school early by a semester to go to the university. And his reason was to go overcome the learning curve before he started playing. And that was last year, Alex Karabin. And he says in the paper that this made a big difference. I knew what to expect. I knew I was going to be coached. I had no learning curve the year I played last year. They won the championship. And if you're a sports nut, they also won it this year. And he was a big factor. So that's why light bulb moments and learning curve, to me, go right together.
It's such an interesting thing because we hear that, you know, I have a learning curve, or you know, there's going to be a learning curve with this new topic or thing that I'm endeavoring to do. But I don't know that we really stop and think about what that term means, learning curve. In the beginning of the book, you actually give some definitions of it. And I would love for you to share what your definition is of a learning curve. What is a learning curve?
A learning curve is when you're in a new situation and you don't have any experience back here to bring forth, how am I going to do this? How am I going to achieve this? How can I accept this? I did a lot of public speaking. And one of the things I learned, a lot of people come to a speech because their boss sent them, their manager, you need to go to this. And what I learned up front was, I was very fortunate. One of the companies I worked with years ago sent me to a class for a week. It was called Meeting People on Their Terms. And they broke it into four categories. The important thing is not necessarily what category you in, but what category is the person you're talking to. And your job is to go and make them feel comfortable. If they're comfortable, they're going to talk and share things with you. Plus, they're going to trust you because you're working on their terms, not your terms. So whenever I talk to a group or an audience or coach someone, I ask a lot of questions. And I've learned also, I was called sometimes the teacher who didn't answer questions, my own, because I stopped. That means they have to think, oh, what's he going to say next? They start participating. And if they start participating, they're probably not going to walk away mentally or physically. And to get people involved, that's the whole thing, in my opinion.
And there's an element of the learning curve that I think is daunting for people. You know, sometimes people will decide not to do something because the learning curve feels too steep or too overwhelming or too scary. What would you say to somebody out there that, like, for example, writing a book? Let's say there's somebody out there listening who wants to write a book but doesn't know how, and the learning curve of figuring it out seems daunting. How would you advise them with your knowledge of the light bulb moments that happen and how the learning curve can be broached even when it feels daunting?
The first story in the book is entitled Leave, L-E-A-V-E. I went to a high school, second oldest in America, started in 1638. And most of my teachers were there 20, 30, 40 years. After college, I went back there as a history teacher. At the end of the first year, the vice principal, who had been my history teacher when I was a student, said, come up and see me at the end of the day. And he said, Dave, I'm glad you're here. And we chatted about teachers and so forth. And he said, I've been here 43 years and I'm leaving in 30 days. I'm retiring. He said, I'm glad you're here and I want you to leave. And if you come back, great. If you don't come back, great. I want you to go out and sample the world, which I never had a chance to do. That was the first wow that I really remember in my life. He sent me on a journey. So within a few years, I was teaching math. I was teaching in California, left teaching, went into the business world, did a lot of different things. And a lot of the classes programs I led, I'd see them later and they'd say, gee, remember that story you said such, such? I tell my kids about that. I tell my associates. And that's when I said, gee, I got to start writing some of these things down. So 7 or 8 years ago, I just started writing down. I did a lot of substitute teaching and I had sometimes on the computer and I'd write a story, put it in a folder and did this for several years. I finally put together about 45 to 50 stories and took me several years to do this. And we had a new pastor and he had a PhD in English. And his number one thing about him that was so great, he was a great communicator, fabulous. If he met you once, he knew you, he knew your story. I sent him those stories and his response is actually on the cover of the book. He said, Dave, these are wonderful and great. Reminds a little bit of Will Rogers and Good Folk Stories. He said, it's very deceptive. And that said to my brain, keep going. And now 3, 4, 5 years later, with your help, this is what I have.
I love that. So keep going and don't be afraid to let it take time. You know, that it doesn't all have to happen all at once, that it can unfold over time as you collected your stories and wrote them down and eventually compiled them. And here they are. You are a wonderful storyteller. And as you read the book, those of you that are listening, when you go and read the book, you'll enjoy the stories. I think we often learn through story. And a lot of your stories, Dave, are about sports. So I often think sports are an analogy for life, so I get it. But share with the listeners who don't know you a little bit about your interest in sports and why you choose to tell those kinds of stories to teach your lessons and to make your points.
As I talked about University of Connecticut and then Alex Kiraban and what happened to him, it was a follow-up story last spring in the Dallas Morning News, and it talked about Seager, the shortstop. He was an all-star shortstop in Los Angeles, traded to the Texas Rangers 2 years ago. And new team, Texas is a little bit different than LA. new family, new all sorts of new things. He had his worst year ever. I don't think he realized that there was going to be a period here that he had to do things differently. New teammates, new leadership, new management, new surroundings, kids in a new place, everything new. And I think he finally said, this year, last year, 23, he said, everything clicked because I knew what I was doing. I knew my friends. I knew how to do this. I knew how they were going to practice. I knew what the leadership was doing, and he had his best year ever by far. MVP of the world champion, Texas Rangers. So that's another sport story, but it was very interesting. In January, it came out that King Charles III, I believe, if I'm correct, had cancer. And immediately I said, oh, this is interesting. I'm a history major, so I'm always interested in what's going on. And I saw in the paper, it said that the prince and princess, his son and the marriage, would have to help because he wasn't going to be able to do all this. And the headline said, Prince and Princess on Learning Curve. There it is in life. So it's not just sports, it's everything all the time. We just sold our house. We're both in our early 80s to a retirement community. It's very different. Very different. Now that we've been here for 2 months, we're getting a little accustomed to it. Yeah, there's a learning curve. And I don't care if you're 2 or 22 or 82, there's going to be some learning things because one of the key things in the book is life changes whether you like it or not. Plain and simple.
Isn't it absolutely the truth? Absolutely the truth. Actually, I love that you just gave some very practical real life examples, but certainly about the royalty and the monarchy and how their learning curve is happening. Funny that they use those words in the article. And also because as you were writing this book, actually just about done, you were in the process of selling your house and all of the chaos around that and settling into a new place. So how do you take that concept that life happens to you, whether you like it or not, change is inevitable. You will have a learning curve. It's okay to take it a little bit at a time and allow yourself the space time that you need to learn what you need to learn. How do you incorporate light bulb moments into that? You kind of mentioned them a little bit earlier, but in the practical example, for example, you moving into this new community, what are some of the light bulb moments that have helped you make that transition?
One of the great things about light bulb moments, they can be your light bulb moments, or if you talk to other people, read other things, they also have experienced these things. And I read a book from the University of Chicago, and it's in my book, study was done that people learn not only from their own mistakes, but from other people's mistakes. As a matter of fact, the study showed you're very receptive to other people's mistakes because they weren't yours personally. So you didn't take offense at it. Sometimes when you go through the experience, you're not real happy because it was you. But if you use other people's positives and negatives, that can be a big light bulb moment. The big TV star, Winfrey, what's her last name?
Oprah.
There you go, Oprah. She had a big thing on aha moments. And that's really what light bulb moments, when a flash comes on saying, oh, now I got it. And I just read recently another article, I do like to read about this kind of stuff, that sometimes these light bulb moments don't come on right away. And sometimes they come on slowly saying, oh, this changes what I used to think in my pattern. My pattern's right, but this now is a different fork in the road, so I got to go a different way. A great example of this, we bought a house in Plano 15 years ago, and it had two beautiful trees in the front. We often said we bought the two trees and the house came with it. About 4 years ago, 5 years ago, on an afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I'm watching a ball game or something. I heard this crash. And I go out, and that big live oak, huge tree has split in half. Fortunately, it landed between my house and the neighbor's house. Now, I did some damage to the gutters and so forth. We called the experts. He said, you should take it down because we're afraid the other half could fall on the house. With hindsight, we probably shouldn't have done it, but we did it. So now we had a house with sun half the day and then shade on the other day. We started to lose the leaves on the second tree 2 or 3 years later. And so I called the same company. And he comes out and looking, he says, it has rotted roots. It's going to be, you should take it down. So now we're going to have a beautiful house with no trees protecting us in Texas. And guess what? We couldn't do one thing about it. Life throws you stuff. Accept it. That's it. Period. End of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And in many of your stories in the book, you'll see not only does life get thrown at you, but also that when you do just go through the learning curve, you experience the aha and that light bulb, that it actually might end up better than what you had thought it would be to begin with. I'm thinking about a couple of the stories. We talked about sports, obviously that's important to you, but we can't dismiss the fact that you were a math teacher, as you mentioned earlier, and some of the stories where you integrate your math background into them. Can you share a story that might come to mind that where you're talking about the math component and how that was an important element in your life?
Interesting story. I was with my wife in New York State and in Vermont in the second week of October, foliage season. And we had just been to Vermont for 4 or 5 days. In those days, we used to try to go back every fall for a couple of days at least. And we were in New York visiting her friend, and I got a phone call from a high school in Frisco and said, "We need you tomorrow. We have a geometry teacher who has been here for a month and really bad reports on her. Can you be here tomorrow?" I said, "No, it's Thursday. I'm in New York. I will be back Monday morning. Please be here at 7 a.m. School starts at 9. Please be here at 9 so we can get you with the department chairman, get you set going." Now, the truth was I hadn't taught geometry in 40 years. So I went in that morning and subjects change, math changes, but fortunately, most of the geometry was the same. So within an hour, I felt good enough. And an hour later, I was out teaching. And the most wonderful happened at the end of the first period. A girl comes up and she says to me, "Mr. Carlson, I have learned more in the first period with you than I did that lady for 30 days. So I guess I said, "Whoa, I guess I'm going to be doing okay." So every day I went in early. Reviewed it. Parenting is like teaching. You're teaching kids. You're showing them the right way, step by step. The biggest thing in math is everything is a step to a step to a step to a step. You got to have knowledge of adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, and then you do pre-algebra. You can't do 2x equals 5 unless you know how to divide. And then you learn whatever you do to the left, you do to the right. So there's a process in math. And I think in most things in life, there is a process that you go through, whether you realize it or not, there is. A great example of this is we were in France. Yeah, we were in France about 5 years ago. And we were in Giverny for the weekend. No, excuse me. We were in Mount St. Michel for the weekend. And we were all going over to Giverny. But we wanted to go see the cathedral at Chartres, C-H-A-R-T-E-S, built in the 1200s. Supposed to be one of the most magnificent. We drive there and we see people all over, young people walking with blankets and sleeping bags. And we didn't know what was going on. We saw a car go up to a gate, speak to the guy, and they let him in. I said, "Oh, we're going to follow him." We went up to the gate, and the guy says, "Yes, can I help you?" I said, "Yeah, I want to come see the cathedral." Answer was, "That would be impossible." I said, "I beg your pardon?" He says, "Oh, this is such and such. I didn't quite understand what he said, but no, there's no way you can get up there. We're more than full." We drive away. Now, we drove special to see this place, and I don't go to France every day of the year or every year. So we said, "This is not acceptable." Very fortunately, about three blocks down, there was a priest. My wife stopped. Fortunately, he spoke English. And she asked him, "Is there a parking space somewhere in the next few streets or blocks or something and get into the cathedral?" He said, "Oh, yeah, just go find a parking space and follow the crowd." So we found a parking space, and I taught driver ed for many years in high school. So I was pretty good at finding, and of course, small cars. And sure enough, we followed literally, not hundreds, thousands of people up all these entryways and get up there. And then I looked to get in. They all have a pass to get in. I said, "I don't have a pass." So I go up to the guy, and he doesn't speak much English, but I said, "I want to go in cathedral, take pictures." he said, and I understood enough, go around, there's a door open on the side. So we got in and saw all these great pictures, unbelievable cathedral windows, just magnificent, took all sorts of pictures and videos and everything. And we were pooped when we finished and went across the street to a little bar and said, two tall beers, please. I went online to see what the thing was. And it was a big notice. Yeah. 16,000 people had walked, mostly kids and teenagers and people that want to repent and everything. They walked from Notre Dame. They had a fire that year, so it actually was Saint Sulpice they walked from. But yeah, they walked 65 miles in 3 days, and they come to this cathedral, and that was what we were part of. I mean, a lifetime thing. Thank God we said, no, impossible's not. We're here. We're going to get there. And I think it's just, I didn't grow up with a lot, and I learned, don't take no for an answer and just go make it happen. Sometimes it does, not always, but most times it does happen.
That's a beautiful story. You actually share a lot about your travels in the book. You've traveled to some beautiful places. Can you share a little more of some of the other places that you've traveled that have been great memories for you?
Well, fortunately, with the companies I was with through the years, I visited every state but Alaska. So I know America pretty well. When I left California in 2007 and semi-retired, before I went back subject to teaching, we bought a house in Plano. And so for the last 15 years, we traveled quite a bit, mostly in Europe. Fortunately, mostly a month at a time. Last time in France, it was 6 weeks. We've learned really, the first time we went, we weren't sure of traveling that far. We hired a company called Untours. They meet you at the airport. They have a person you can always call and contact if you need help, because we didn't know anything about traveling. And I thought it was a great experience we had, that they gave us a little inside knowledge each and every time. That helps greatly. We also went to Italy, and I had read Rick Steves' books. That's a great, you're going to travel, guys, Rick Steves. Everything's in there. You read it. Like a book, like a history book, read it. And we went to see Michelangelo's David in Florence. And sure enough, we got on the bus and parked the car just where he said, took the bus down. And then all of a sudden I said, what exit? What do I get off the bus? So I talked to this lady next to me, and she sort of implied she didn't speak English, but she said, and she tapped a lady next to her and talked to her, and that lady came over and said, how can I help you? I said, I don't know what bus stop to get off to go see David at the academy. And she said, let me get my son just a minute. Brought over this young guy in his 20s and who spoke very good English, obviously, and said, okay, I'll get you off there. He said, it's a tough place. I'm going to actually walk you to the academy, because in Italy, there might be a strike. There might be a demonstration, which there was, getting off the bus. If he hadn't taken us around the demonstration, I don't know. We got there with 10 minutes to spare. It's a time ticket. If you don't get there, you don't get in. Because of this wonderful person helping us. And that's the biggest thing we've learned. Most people in Europe want to help you. They'll answer your questions. They'll go out of your way. We couldn't find our B&B in England. We followed the Google thing. Then we finally said, well, what are you going to do? I said, let's go back. We went by a eating place, a tavern. Thank you. Couldn't think of the right word. A tavern. We went back there, parked the car, and I walked in, went to the head desk there. And I said, I need some help to find this address. He said, just a minute. And he saw some people leaving, and he went over to them, talked to them, and then came over and said, these people will take you there. It's very tricky to find. They'll be glad to help you. We followed them. We went through a road, through a golf course, around, bingo. People are more than willing to help. That's our biggest thing we've learned for travel. I got 10 more stories in the book about that. Travel is great.
Yeah, there are many great stories about travel and just picking some of the lessons out of that, not being afraid to say no, not taking no for an answer, continuing to find new ways, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Again, that sounds so simple, but it isn't always that easy when you're, especially when you're in a place where they don't speak the language, or even if they do speak the language, sometimes we get caught up in not wanting to ask for help, which flattens our learning curve, doesn't it? It doesn't give us that chance to actually get the experience that we want to have.
I learned a long time ago that selling, that's teaching, parenting, selling isn't telling, it's asking questions.
Again, a simple concept, but a good one to practice because it isn't always as easy to ask questions as it sounds, but it does open doors and opportunities and experiences that you might not have otherwise. And those light bulb moments might happen as a result. Right. If you could sum up what you hope people take from your book, Dave, what do you want somebody who reads your book to walk away with?
At a young age, I don't know where I got this, but I learned that life is not where you are. It's where you are relative to where you started. We were poor. We didn't own a house. We didn't own a car. We didn't own a TV till I was 12 or 13 years old. And by the way, that was all my neighborhoods the same way. There were no cars. There were no houses. We all lived in tenements. Sometimes there was a family of four that lived in a one-bedroom house for 20 years. These were my friends I grew up with. At the 50th anniversary, these are doctors, lawyers, anything's possible. That's what I learned at a very, very early age. Don't take no for an answer. One of the interesting things is when you go to Paris, oh, they're not friendly. We never met one Parisian that wasn't nice and helped us. Never. So don't go with, but, oh, no. We wanted to go to, in Italy, we wanted to go to Pusitana. And we were in Atrani. And untoward lady who knew the area said, what are you going to do? I said, oh, we're going to take the ferry over, walk up, and then take the bus back. She said, no, wrong way. Take the bus over because it stops way up high on the hill, on the mountain. Walk down leisurely through it, have a nice leisurely dinner when it's warm, and get on the ferry and come back. Because I was willing to ask, and she knew, we won that trip in a positive way that day because we weren't afraid to ask. That's what we've learned is last story on asking. I was with Century 21 for many years on the West Coast. And we did a big thing in the 80s with service. Everything was service, service, service. And I was instrumental in helping develop some management programs. And I was invited to go up to the Northwest. The people that owned our region also owned the Northwest, to go up to Seattle and actually go to the islands out there and do a conference. So I said, well, if I'm going to go to Seattle and I want to talk about service, I should talk to Nordstrom's. That's supposed to be the place. So about a week before I was going to go, I called Nordstrom's. And I'm waiting for 8 phone calls. You know, I made one call and she says, just a minute, please. I asked for Mr. Nordstrom. He answered the phone, one call. He answered the phone. I said, I want to come up and chat with you for a while. When are you coming? I'll give you half an hour, 11:30 to 12. I went up and talked to him, interviewed him with a tape recorder for half an hour before I got on a float plane over to the islands. I've learned companies more than willing to share with you if you just ask.
Yeah, great, great, great reminders. Let's talk a little bit about the writing process. You mentioned earlier that you started taking your stories down sort of over time. People said you should share them and you kind of spent some time writing them. Again, thinking of listeners out there that have not done that yet or who have maybe bits and pieces of writing that they've done, Share a little bit about what your process of putting the book together was like, and maybe any advice you have for somebody who wants to write a book and isn't quite sure where to begin?
Best thing to do is get a pad of paper, just like I have here, and I just wrote them down. And then a month, 2 months, 3 months later, I would type them on a word processor on a machine. And then fortunately, my wife is a pretty good editor. Wait, excuse me, 1 second. Spam. My wife is a pretty good person for editing, so she could go through and pretty much, I write the way I talk, and you can't write the way you talk. But if you put it down on a piece of paper, then a good editor, a good person can really make it understandable to people that are going to read it. From my book that I'm going to have on Amazon very shortly, they wanted a biography. So I started with, I've lived in Connecticut for 38 years and I lived in California. She made three sentences, one nice long sentence, because she's good at that stuff. That's not my gift. So you don't have to be perfect. You can hire people like Kelly right here and other people that were more than willing. They're good at that. You get the story to them, they'll make it work. You have to edit things over and over and over. I've learned that. And then this one, you think you're done? Nope. There's two more things, three more things, four more things. Such is the nature. But this started 8 years ago, so it doesn't happen overnight.
We actually have a lot of authors who come to us who have had a book in process for years and years and years and years. I remember when we first started, someone had one that was in their desk drawer, written, completely done for 14 years, but just didn't know where to take it next. You make a good point though, just sideline to that. You make a good point because sometimes people are good storytellers like you are. And verbally, you can spin a tale and tell the story. And as a listener, we can absorb it and kind of follow where you're going. And yet, remarkably, that doesn't always translate in the written word. Oftentimes, when you try and write that way, it's so all over the place that our brain doesn't absorb it the same way. Right. And so I'm really glad you pointed that out, because if somebody out there is a storyteller and says, you know, I don't know how to write it because it doesn't sound right. Correct. That is true, which is why having a good editor is important.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I was actually working with somebody just before we got on this interview that is a wonderful storyteller in the same thing. And when it comes out in the written word, it's just an interesting thing that we don't absorb it the same way. But there are plenty of good editors in the world. And if you find somebody like your wife or somebody that can take the message and just craft it into words that make more sense for the reader, then it comes out to be a beautiful book.
Yeah. And then she's not perfect. And then you go to the next step and take a professional and you got it.
That's right. And like you said, editing is an endless process. It can take many, many iterations. And just when you think you're done, there's a couple more things. And no matter how many eyes are on it, there always seems to be a couple more things. So be patient and just allow those edits to happen. Now that the book is coming out, Dave, what are you looking forward to? What's next? What are you going to do with the book?
I made the list, like you said, of many, many people with their today, if they're young, it's got to be a phone number and a text. My children and grandchildren don't read emails, basically. You got to text them. So I have one text list, and I have for my older friends and relatives, I have an email list. So I'm going to let them know that we're going to be launching the book, as you suggested. The whole thing is, not that my book is the best thing that's ever been written, but the fact that the people that I worked with through in meetings and coaching, all they all said, this is good stuff. I use it. I just want people to be able to see it. I always believe this: when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. If you're looking for something, you will find something in a story, in a magazine, on the TV, a friend. Something will pop up in the next week or two or three or four, whatever it might be. Aha, light bulb moment. There it is. That's what I'm looking for. It's just life keeps moving. It does not stop. John Wooden, coach at UCLA, the day we stop learning, we are dead.
So true. So true. Always growing, always growing. And such an inspiration, Dave, that you're in your 80s and you're still growing, getting new book out, getting sharing your wisdom and your life lessons with anybody, any student that's out there. And I use student in quotes, you know, we're all students of life, students out there who are ready to learn and to take your stories and glean whatever they need from them. Before we finish up today, Dave, I want to just ask you, because the title of this podcast is It Just Takes One, because the concept of one is intriguing. And when we put out one book, one idea, it ripples outward in many different ways. It means different things to different people. So before we finish, I want to just take a moment to hear what It Just Takes One means to you.
We can go right back to the very beginning of this conversation. When Mr. Perry, the vice principal, who had been my math teacher, excuse me, my history teacher, said, come up and see me. I'm glad you're here, but I want you to leave. That, at age 24 or 25, was a big aha moment. He had stayed and been successful and wonderful. But he saw something in me, I guess. I was a good student, like in the Honor Society and all that. But he saw something that he wanted me to experience that he never had, which is other things. Mark Twain says, anyone that does not travel has missed life. You've got to go out, meet different people. One of the reasons that Toyota left California to come to Plano, Texas, and I lived in Plano, Totten. Plano was a cheaper place, more important, very, very spread in terms of cultures, languages, backgrounds, not all from this or all from that or all have, no, a sample of everything. And that's the way life is. And folks, if you don't like it, it's going to be more that way in the future. Diversity is what it is. It's not going the other way.
True, true. So one person saying one thing, yeah, one book with one message can make all the difference.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Dave, it's been a pleasure working with you. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thanks for joining me for the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it.
As we come to the end of this episode, I hope that you paused long enough to think about the light bulb moments in your life and to open up to embarking on a learning curve, to trying something new and to learning something from it. As Dave said, a light bulb moment is an experience that you have that gives you a life lesson. And if you're willing to challenge yourself and get outside the comfort zone and embark on that learning curve, then you have the potential for some incredible experiences. Dave has a great quote that says, never stop learning because life never stops teaching. And I think that is a beautiful message to take away from this conversation today. I hope you'll check out Dave's book. It's available on Amazon, and I'll make sure all of the information is in the show notes below. And continue to follow him and his stories. And that brings us to an end of another episode of It Just Takes One. As always, we're so grateful and appreciative of you joining us here. And if you or anyone you know has wanted to write a book but doesn't know where to begin, then go to scripterpublishinggroup.com and schedule an initial consult with one of us so that we can talk through it and answer your questions. We're here to help you go from dream to published.